Hello, and welcome to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Thank you for joining us today on this kind of rainy spring day. I'm happy to be here. We have a special guest joining us today. I would like to introduce to the show Christian Raymond. He's a campaign manager for Ron Berman, who is running for Delegate District 23 in Virginia as a Republican, and who's also talking about some aspects of medical freedom. So welcome, Christian. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Heather, so much for having me. I really, really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you so much. So I was looking at Ron Berman's website a little bit before the show and saw his statement about the Obamacare and the barriers to medicine that it presented. So I know I certainly have my own story about that, but Christian, can you tell us a little bit about what you know about the candidate and what has brought him to this issue as an issue of importance?
Sure. Yeah, Ron is a good friend of mine, and I've known him for a little while now. Working with him's really been a privilege. But Ron, he and his wife have a small business where they do language services like transcription, editing, and stuff like that, translation even. His wife's from an immigrant from Eastern Europe, so they do a lot of Hungarian translation and things like that. But on the transcription side, they've worked a lot with medical transcription and things of that nature. So they're very versed in the medical field as a whole, even though they're not doctors themselves. So they also homeschool their two children, ages 12 and 9. So they're very... they're very informed individuals as far as what they want to do in education and how to take care of their family. So when Obamacare became law, the Berman family lost their health insurance. And this is a story that many families across the nation have. If you're not in the clique of the industry or buying the government insurance programs, you can get penalized, and that is exactly what happened. And they were forced to essentially resign that health insurance program in order to buy something under Obamacare-approved law. And it was not only a little bit more expensive, but it was also not exactly what they wanted. But that is what they were forced to do until things got a little bit changed more recently under the new administration.
Yeah, I know when the Obamacare came about, I was forced to pay for an insurance that was really a barrier to healthcare.
Right.
Because it's an insurance that you have to pay for every month, but you're still responsible for the first $2,000 of expense accrued.
Right.
So a person in my position doesn't just have $2,000 laying around to play with. So, whereas uninsured, I could be put into a sliding scale rate and, the doctors had means of working with uninsured people. But now if you have the mandated insurance, well, now you're covered. So you're charged at the insured rate. However, you don't necessarily have the funds available to pay for the healthcare. So it was like, a couple of years I couldn't get healthcare.
It's even that on top of other regulations when you're a small business owner, which Ron and his wife are, so even though it's just the husband and wife duo team, that's still classified as a small business. So there's even more regulations with regards to giving your employees healthcare and things of that nature. So when you expand the issue of the government demanding certain health programs, you take that and put it with small business owners who they don't have, like you said, $2,000 just drop a fly, but multiply that by how many employees they have. It's very mm-hmm. difficult when government says, hey, you need to do X, but you actually can't afford X. You can only afford an eighth of X or whatever. So it's essentially tyranny in medicine and mm-hmm. healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's forcing people to buy a corporate product. You know, one of the when Obama came out with this idea of a national healthcare system, you know, it had some potential there. But what he did was to build the framework of his healthcare system around the existing insurance companies, these for-profit industrial entities that then became factored into the government. And this kind of marriage between government and industry, you know, there's words for it, like fascism and oligarchy, and it's just not something that we should be entertaining in a free society, a supposedly free society, something that hopefully we are still striving for. Yeah.
I noticed, I haven't had a chance to look up the exact quote, but on your Facebook page, I saw you referenced Benjamin Rush, and I never mm-hmm. knew that he actually made that connection, but that's an excellent connection where when the government takes over a certain aspect of the culture or of industry, it is fascism in a way where it's nationalizing an industry and taking it from something that should be decentralized and more individual mm-hmm. to something more collectivist and top-down, which it's a problem. And we've seen many examples in history where that failed. So it's very unfortunate when we call ourselves the greatest nation in the world, which I believe we are in many, many respects, but we're mm-hmm. making a lot of the same mistakes that past nations have done, and we need to be careful how we move forward with that.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Benjamin Rush, I'm glad you brought him up, was a very interesting founding father. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And while the provision was being made for religious freedom, he was saying, hey, we need a similar provision for medical freedom. Because medicine should not fall into the hands of just one class.
Right.
Let's say. And that's what we're in right now. We have kind of accepted this structure of an expertocracy that just because this group of people has gone through this system, has these certifications and these degrees, they have full authority to make the medical decisions for everybody else.
Right.
And a thing I'd like to really see in the struggle for medical freedom is for each individual to have expert standing when it comes to their own body. Because a person who has lived in their own skin from the moment they were born to the present is an expert in that particular human body. And often when you hear stories of medical malpractice, of injury, or death, there's usually somewhere in that narrative, the patient or a family member said, no, I need X, or do not administer Y. And that statement is ignored because they don't have that standing. They don't have expert status in the medical situation.
And absolutely.
And so they're ignored. So what are some of, now when Ron talks about medical freedom, like how is he defining it? Is he basing it on the ideas of Benjamin Rush, or does he have his own kind of pet issues?
Well, he takes it from a more philosophical viewpoint. Another founding father, Benjamin Franklin, said, or is attributed to saying, those who sacrifice in essential liberty for temporal safety deserve neither liberty or safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to so many different, only national security issues, but also like the special class idea in the medical field, as well as in the lawyer field, where right? You have these classes of professions where they are essential in many ways. They're, we need that blue-collar and white-collar worker force, but then you take the respective, what is essential liberty? And it's the, Ron believes that liberty is defined as an individual's right to make personal choices, as long as that action or that right that he is or she is exercising does not infringe on the rights of other human beings. And that's a basic God-given human right, to bodily autonomy, as well as bodily responsibility, where you're able to say, yes, I want to take this treatment, or no, I don't want to take that treatment. Yes, you want to be informed, but you also want to have that ultimate say on what goes in your body. So on top of that, our issue statement on Ron's website, he says, forcing an individual to take a treatment by an insurance plan or refusing an individual a life-saving treatment is both dangerous and immoral. So he believes that on the, when you're speaking of morality, the purpose of medicine, do no harm. You're supposed to administer either medicine.
Are you aware that modern medical students, people entering the medical freedom, are not required to take that oath?
I was not aware of that. I know that it's been definitely strained in many respects, but I did not know that.
Well, now their main responsibility is to law enforcement. And that doesn't always coincide with what's best for the patient, what's best for human health. Actually, I work a lot in my own life and in this radio show. I'll say most of the guests that have been on my show are either people in chronic pain or doctors who treat people in chronic pain, or activists who are fighting for the right for people in chronic pain to get pain medicine. Because right now, that has become a really big issue. The government can no longer sustain the war on drugs based primarily on cannabis because too much information has come to light about cannabis. However, people are still largely ignorant about opiates. They don't understand that that too is natural plant-based medicine that has been around for countless thousands of years, as far back as our recorded history goes, that works beautifully with the human body and is very beneficial. So what's going on right now, this supposed drug epidemic that they're talking about, is just more of this hysteria to perpetuate the war on drugs, to perpetuate prohibition, to perpetuate a police state, increasing prisons. There's in fact a anti-prison rally going on this evening in our community here, because this community is largely become a prison-based economy, kind of driven out the jobs, and all there is incarceration. Like in the state of New York, like incarceration is a big industry. And those industrial influences are influencing the lawmaking, they're influencing the policy, and they're just working to keep their war machine perpetuated and going as long as they can.
And you brought up opioids. That's become a national issue. Here in Virginia, it's one of the top talked about issues in all of the political campaigns I've seen now. And you have these very, very rural areas like where I live, where it's not such a big deal, but you do have those pockets in rural communities and then suburban communities that are just exploding with opioid abuse. And it is a legitimate issue, but you got to ask the question, where did this issue originate?
And how do we define abuse?
And how do we define it? Because you can say, oh, it's a major issue, it's a health crisis, and then now it's a national security crisis, and that starts to enter the the quote I said.
Mm-hmm. Like if all use without a prescription is by default considered abuse.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're skewing.
The wording is being redefined as the crisis is being redirected to political means or political purposes. So you're exactly right. You got to define what abuse is. You got to define what opioids are, even because not everyone really knows. Like, oh, you'll just get something from the store, or maybe
they think it's Monsanto and petrochemicals, not a flower that they can grow in their garden.
Yeah. So in Virginia, the issue now is where you have individuals who need pain meds who are being overprescribed or double prescribed the same thing too much.
I don't think that's happening anywhere, quite honestly. Pain patients right now are being forced into suicide. In fact, the numbers that you see for overdose deaths are really horribly skewed because so many of those supposed overdose deaths were people who live in intractable pain, who were given a prescription, told, here you go, enjoy it, it's your last. So they go and take that whole bottle home and swallow it because they don't want to look at that future.
Wow.
And that is the reality nationwide. Ever since the CDC came out with these ridiculous guidelines and took the power to treat pain away from the general practitioners, the people who work the closest with the patient, who really understand the situation, and diverted it off to these specialists, you know, quote unquote specialists, who then are running their own little scam to stay within the guidelines, to stay legal, to keep their prescribing license. And they're using medicines improperly. They're using antidepressants for a supposed pain-killing side effect that could be causing all kinds of havoc in the person's body because they're just too afraid to use the time-honored medicine that really, our bodies create opiates. Our endorphins are opiates. We're all opiate sensitized. We're all opiate addicted, if you want to say, because our bodies create that and we work with it. And this is a medicine that imitates our own natural biochemistry and is really the best medicine for pain for most people. I say for most people, because in medicine, nothing is ever blanket. You know, nothing is ever, you can't say this treatment will work for everyone who has that, because there's always going to be an exception. And that's why people need to have an expert say in their own body.
Right, and that goes back to what we were saying earlier about individualized treatment instead of a collectivist blanket ruling on everyone who has this symptom needs X. Mm-hmm. It is a very individualized thing. And with the case of Ron Berman, when he went to, he's from New Jersey originally. He went to the University of Chicago for a time and then moved down to Virginia to go to Liberty University to learn some biblical studies and things of that nature, worldview studies. But while he was at Liberty University, he had a back injury of sorts, and that made him have to not go to college anymore. But the doctors were saying, oh, you need to use X. It wasn't opioid at the time. I forget what medicine it was, but you need to use this particular pain med. And Ron was like, well, I'll keep that in the closet in case something major happens, but I can use ibuprofen and aspirin, and it works just as well. I might need to use two instead of one, but it still works, because he didn't want to possibly fall into the trap of getting addicted.
Yeah,
to
see, he's buying into all the hysteria, because he's probably already used opiates and probably hasn't even given it much thought, because if you go to a dentist for a root canal or something, you know, you're always getting opiates. But now everybody is like so hyped up on it. That's certainly not the first story I've heard of somebody who really was in a situation where they should have been taking the opiate medicine and they turned towards the liver destroying acetaminophen. Actually, those other medicines like Tylenol and ibuprofen, especially Tylenol, are more dangerous to the human system than the opiates.
Right. I was just describing this scenario from years ago.
And I want to remind our listeners who might be just tuning in that you're listening to the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. Today, I am speaking with Christian Raymond, who is the campaign manager for Ron Berman, who's running for delegate in District 23 of Virginia. That's a Republican and also somebody concerned about many of the medical issues going on in our country. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but after 20 minutes, I have to give our info. So you were talking about how he had the injury and he was afraid to take the opioid pain medicine.
Right. I'm not exactly sure if it was opioid at that time. This was many, many years ago. But it goes back to the idea of individualized treatment and informed consent, essentially, of which medicine.
Right. Some people can't take opioids. Some people just don't have a good reaction to it.
Right.
Some people might have another medicine. Like some people find that cannabis can work as a substitute for pain treatment for the opiates. That, however, is not the case for everyone.
Right.
For most people, actually, cannabis increases physical sensation awareness. So if they're in chronic pain, that might not be the treatment that they want to take. However, it's really a bad situation when you have government stepping in and saying, okay, we're going to take away the treatment that's been working for you and leave you to suffer, because that's really the message that chronic pain patients are getting.
Right. And here, I'm not exactly sure what it's like in New York, but here we don't have medical cannabis is still not legalized or decriminalized here in Virginia, and that's one thing that's very, very touchy.
Yeah, in New York, it's probably similar. They supposedly have a medical program, but it's people are not allowed to actually have any of the raw plant material. It has to be only extracts, and the extracts are full of chemicals like propylene glycol. So a person with a health issue has to take on all these other chemicals that they might not want, probably don't want, and certainly don't need, because the state wants everything to be very controlled, to come only through certain companies that are, you know, in the right pockets.
I believe that it's very, very similar here, where you're not allowed to grow anything, but you are allowed to purchase certain things from out of state, I think is how it's set up. So it's very, very regulated right now. And it's unfortunate because there are so many success stories of medical cannabis where even with cancer, even a gentleman I spoke with earlier today, actually, we're going to be meeting and discussing this issue soon about what is the best legal and medical policy, I guess, to encourage innovation in medicine, so that it takes government out of the strong, heavy hand of government and allow medical practitioners and industry to expand and to grow and to find these new cures. Because, like, as a Christian, I personally, and Ron would definitely agree with this, every plant out there that we believe God created is good for something, even if it's for industrial uses, maybe for medical uses or even industrial, like with cannabis, even it could be used for like toilet paper, I heard.
It seems to me that any kind of plant prohibition just flies in the face of any kind of recognition of a creator that made these things. Like, why should we decide that some part of creation should be illegal?
And the concern, like, I like to use the example of hemlock, for instance. Of course, it's a dangerous substance. Nobody in their right mind would eat hemlock. However, it can be used to kill off certain, like as a pesticide or something of that nature. It could be used to control bad things. Like it's there. Even the worst plant you can think of can be used for something. Mm-hmm. And that's my personal philosophy, as well. I believe that Ron thinks that, like you said, if there is a creator, which we believe, then he created things for a reason, mm-hmm. even the bad things.
And maybe those things aren't necessarily bad, but right, misunderstood.
Right. The bad in the human terminology, like okay,
like mosquitoes, like I hear right, a lot of exactly. these crazy draconian plans to drive them to extinction, but you know how many other right. organisms depend on them in the food chain, you know, that right. probably not be a very good thing for us. So I want to get back a little bit to the issues. Now, is Ron Berman saying that he's on a medical freedom platform, or how is he applying that term to his campaign?
We're using the term medical and healthcare freedom because we want to include some of the health insurance mm-hmm. Debates that have been happening. Medical freedom is the generic term we're using, though, because it encompasses more more policy-based things instead of individual.
There's a lot of groups and organizations right. that are using that term and defining it different ways.
Right.
Depending on how it's used, I've encountered groups that are just for cannabis legalization, or saying no, medical freedom is just about having cannabis. But I see, I think what Dr. Benjamin Rush was actually implying is much broader than that.
Right.
It's really about individuals having a say over their own body. And I think one of the reasons why his message wasn't so popular at the time was because of slavery. Because if you start opening up that can of worms and talking about possession of a human body and what constitutes something as your own body, well, that could make it really bad for the slave scene,
right.
you know? So, you know, our history is always tinged by that history of racism and genocide that's a part of our country. And it's affected pretty much every aspect throughout history. So that, whereas that was such an essential provision to make for a free society,
right?
They were kind of compromised in creating a free country when a large number of people were not free.
Right.
And so, I think we still need to strive for that. I think we still need to define self-ownership and that needs to be made a U.S. citizen basic right. You know, you might not be aware, or maybe you are, of the elimination of habeas corpus.
Yep.
Big step backwards there.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah, the fundamental philosophy that Ron is working off of is that he believes that government should be very small,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to expand human liberty by finding where, like exactly where, government can be folded in and reduced at every possible level. And by folded in, we mean, all right, so with the state government here in Virginia or up there in New York, where can the state government give the localities, the cities or the counties, mm-hmm. more responsibility so that the state doesn't have to do it? Or at the national level, where does the federal government, where can that be folded in so that states have more states' rights or mm-hmm. more responsibility? And by using that philosophy and talking about healthcare and medical freedom, where in the Constitution, where in these great founding fathers, does it allow for states to dictate what your health care is, what your medical options are? No,
right.
We don't want bureaucracy. We want individualized treatment and all of that. So, or and competition is a word I like to use, but it's kind of scary when different hospitals are like, oh, we don't actually want to compete with other hospitals. But by doing that, if you believe in capitalism and competition of free markets, applying that those principles to the medical field, we need more competition in the medical field, both with insurance and also with treatment, because the more options available.
Well, right, because the regulations right now keep the competition very small or non-existent. There's a lot of issues with copyright law as applied to medicine. Really believe that's a misappropriation of copyright law. But we are kind of running low on time, and there was a couple questions I still wanted to get to. So for Ron Berman, what's like his stance on vaccine rights?
He believes that parental rights should always trump bureaucratic decisions.
Okay.
And this is one thing that it's a very touchy subject, because you're dealing with so many when you're running for office, you're trying to represent so many different beliefs and different and answer a different fear.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at his website, and you know, so much of it looks good to me about like the medical freedom, getting these insurance companies out of making medical decisions for people, which they're currently doing, which is totally wrong.
Right.
But then he talks about his first issue being to abolish abortion. Mm-hmm. And that just flies in the face of medical freedom as a concept. Mm-hmm. Because to abolish any kind of medical procedure, I'm just like with the prohibitions against drugs. Anytime you prohibit something, you're making that situation exponentially worse. So when alcohol was prohibited, you know, we had booze that could strike a person blind, people who were dying from poorly crafted alcohol concoctions, just like we have right now with the carfentanil and the designer drugs. The more they push a prohibition, the more life is lost, the more dangerous the whole situation comes for anyone. You know, and abolish abortion means a lot of women dying in horrible coat hanger accidents. And I just really can't support that.
Well, the issue, there are a number of issues here. Number one, in the Virginia State Code, abortion is actually an exception to the law. How it's written is you cannot murder a fetus under any circumstance unless you have a state approved medical license, and that section of the code is underneath the medical section of the code instead of the criminal section. There are two different sections in the code, how it's written. There's a criminal section and then a medical section. So that's just some background. But two main events have taken place over the past year and a half. Early last year in Virginia, there was a vote by the General Assembly to expand Obamacare in Virginia, which is state Medicaid expansion. So 19 Republicans actually voted for this, but it was essentially what Obamacare at the federal level, but now it's at the state level. And this is in spite of any mandates removed, all of that's removed. But what that did was it expanded access to abortion, it expanded access to getting on the government dole, essentially, of let's now put people onto a collectivist program, essentially. And that to us, that's very immoral in a way, because the program was, the Medicaid expansion idea was supposed to help those in rural communities who don't have access to the best care and all of that, which is a great cause. But that's not the duty of government to give people health care. The duty of government is to protect life, to protect liberty, and keep the heavy hand of government away from good people and heavier on the bad criminals who actually break laws. So that was one thing that happened in Virginia last
year. You know,
year.
Though I'm pro-choice when it comes to abortion, I'm definitely pro-choice. I'm pro-choice in everything, from vaccines to abortion to tattoos to sex change. You know, it's your body. You have the right to do what you want. However, I'd like to see some Republicans talk about the barriers to adoption that
right.
exist in this country, that
right.
so many families want to adopt a child but cannot.
Absolutely.
These adoption agencies and the way they're operating, basically selling children for the price of designer cars and new mansions.
Right.
If we were at 100% adoption rate in this country and had a waiting list of people who wanted to welcome babies to their families, then maybe we should talk about,
right.
providing a better pathway.
Right. You're absolutely right.
But in this current situation, I mean, to put it upon, a woman who might have been raped or might have been in a situation where her support system is no longer there or might have a medical condition necessitating an abortion, that's not a fair way to apply that.
So I mentioned two different events. There's Medicaid expansion last year, but just this month, just about a week ago now, the state, it wasn't the state Supreme Court, but it was one of the district or circuit court judges made a ruling. This is a Republican appointed judge, mm-hmm. by the way, made a ruling that now in Virginia, you don't need a medical license to perform a first trimester abortion, whether surgically or chemically. And this is just recent, this past week. And what that does is, number one, it negates what the code actually says about having the need for a medical state license to perform an abortion. And number two, it negates the purpose of what Roe v. Wade even was, where people were, like you mentioned, back alley abortions and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of a medical professional performing an abortion is completely void now, because now it's opening the way for literally anyone, the neighbor next door, the veterinarian, whoever, to perform an abortion in the first trimester. And that's only going to expand to the second and third, and who knows after that. But the way we are culturally and with this topic, you're absolutely right about the foster care and adoption system. It is, I know a number of people now who have had to adopt from out of country because
mm-hmm.
it's so much easier
yeah.
than adopting somebody from just down the street even.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's pretty sad. And this is something, I've been involved in Republican Party activism for years now, and this is something that my party is terrible at communicating about the need. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you are pro-life, if you do believe that abortion is wrong, you need to provide the alternative. What is the alternative? It's ministering to women who are in those critical and crisis situations,
mm-hmm.
Whether physically or emotionally. And it's also providing that safeguard for the children once they are born. Like, a lot of pro-life folks are accused of just being, pro-birth and nothing after that. Just get born and have your life. No, there needs to be a balance there where
mm-hmm.
you minister.
And if there was more medical freedom, more availability of birth control and other procedures, the need for abortions would go down.
Yeah, that's the thing. I personally, and Ron would definitely agree with this, we don't think that abortion is ever necessary to the life of the mother. Like, one reason that Ron supports medical freedom and healthcare freedom is that we want to unleash the medical industries so that there is no need for abortion.
He should be a little bit careful about putting on his website, abolish abortion. That doesn't say anything about what you're trying to say, that it's a approach to get rid of the other problems. It just sounds like abolish abortion. So if a mother has a health situation, she might die in childbirth, well, you got to take that risk, because God rules
right.
abortions band, well, and
with regard to the health of the mother scenario, two very fascinating studies.
Christian, we are actually in our last minute of time, so we do have to kind of wrap up the show. I do apologize that my show is so short.
I wish we could go on. This is excellent discussion. To wrap it up, if you look at what Alan Guttmacher, I think is how you pronounce it, one of the former presidents of Planned Parenthood, he actually wrote a report, a thesis defending abortion. But in that report, this is many, many years ago, he said that it's never actually necessary, like abortion is never needed to save the life of the mother. And it's a fascinating study because there are many different extreme pregnancy situations that have already actually been solved, even as early as the 20s. Like, there have been successful treatments where either there's a transplant of the embryo to the womb or whatever the situation is. That happened in the 20s successfully. And we've come so far in the medical field where we're not looking for those solutions anymore from a medical standpoint. We're just saying, oh, let's just get rid of the problem, which might not even be the actual problem. And that goes back to the very beginning of this discussion about individualized treatment. Let's do case-by-case studies of these extreme pregnancies, these medical needs, and find where those solutions can be met to that individual. And once the problem is resolved, hopefully, then you minister. You treat the woman, you help the woman, the mother, throughout her needs and the child's needs, and promote adoption if necessary. So, but yeah, I really, really appreciate your time. This has been a fascinating
discussion. Thank you. You too. It's been a really good discussion. I think we might actually have a little bit more time than I originally thought, so we'll continue for a couple more minutes. But also, going back to, you know, we were talking a little bit about before the supposed quote-unquote drug abuse crisis, you know, we have what we really have is like an epidemic of depression in our country, and you can trace a lot of the depression to overregulation. The fact that so many people are barred from employment because of policies that violate human rights. For example, I don't think anybody should have to pass a urinalysis test for their employment if they are not functioning in an obviously impaired way on their job. They should be allowed to work. These kinds of regulations cause the problems. You know, we talk about like the negative effects of drug abuse, but so many times it's really the negative effects of the prohibition.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. So that's a very interesting way to think about it. Yeah, depression. I've had recent debates on this actually, and you might actually help me clarify how this is viewed from a medical freedom standpoint, but I've heard that depression is both a disease and it's a mindset. And I think there's a little bit of truth to both, where when you have a mindset, either lack of self-preservation or self-will, you lead to a mindset of depression, and then that eventually turns to the body responding negatively to become more of a clinical or a not a physical disease, but more of a mental disease, where it's the individual is in that slump. It's habitual now, where the mindset of I'm not good enough, or I'm not able to get a job or do it well, becomes a habitual cycle of like beating yourself on the back, kind of, if I'm making sense there. But
there can be a medical kind of cause of depression, like some people who might, you know, everything's going great in their life, but they just feel really bad, you know. But that's not actually the case for most people that we right. look at who are alleviating their problems with substances. Right. You know, it's more a case of there are so many barriers to employment, so many barriers to certain industries. Like, for example, I mean, like, you know, back in the 50s, an industrious young person who goes out and rakes leaves for their neighbors might make a good amount of money in a summer and might leverage that into a business. And years later, as an adult, they have a landscaping company.
Right.
Now, the same child with the same kind of drive goes out to work for the community, and suddenly they're in trouble for income tax evasion. They're required to have insurance. They're operating without a license. Their parents are dealing with the police. You know, what kind of a message are we sending to people?
Right. And as far as you brought up income tax, that prompted my
I saw that there, that he's against that. Very good.
Two of the biggest topics in Virginia as far as regulation, there's the occupational licensing
mm-hmm.
and the just day-to-day taxes on wages or sales tax
right.
situation. So with the occupational licensing, you could have the government saying, well, you can't braid hair or you can't be a hairstylist unless you get a state-approved license.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can't rake leaves and be a landscaper without a state-approved license. So it's creating the special classes like we were talking about earlier,
yeah.
with like medical fields and the lawyers and stuff like that. So it's creating the hard-working individuals now need to become a special class instead of working with their hands and doing their skills to the best of their ability and earning a living as well as enjoying what they do without worrying about having to renew a license every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a major issue that Ron wants to address, as well as state income tax. There are 9 states that currently do not have a state income tax. Florida, Tennessee, I think Texas, I'm not too sure there.
Washington.
But Washington State, mm-hmm. yeah. A lot of states are also considering it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that Ron wants to champion.
Mm-hmm.
The district that he's running for, if you're familiar with geography, it's Lynchburg City, which is like the southwestern part of the state a little bit, and then that contains Liberty University proper. And then there's Bedford and a little bit of Amherst County. So it's a pretty rural suburban area, but Lynchburg City has the highest percentage poverty rate in the state, and a lot of that's from the downtown area is just recently being renovated and fixed up so that new companies are coming in, but it's still pretty high. It's like 24%. It's pretty incredible. There's not a lot of people in the...
Oh, well, it seems I just lost... Oh, you just cut out there, Christian. There was a...
Oh, do you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you now. There was just a moment of silence. So if you want to rewind your last 5 seconds, we missed
you. I'll rewind here. What I was saying was that the district that Ron is running in includes Lynchburg City and a town called Madison Heights. And the poverty, like, they're very... Compared to the cities of New York, it's very small, but it's... extremely high percentage of poverty in these cities.
Mm-hmm.
And 24% in Lynchburg, I think about 14-15% in Madison Heights. And one of the things that he's trying to champion is the idea of getting rid of the state income tax,
mm-hmm.
The wage tax and for salaries. What you gain from your labor should not be taxed because
it's unconstitutional.
And
like, the only constitutional tax in the United States is capital gains.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working, you're selling hours of your time, your life, your labor to someone, there's no profit in it. It's just an even
right.
exchange. It's not something that is supposed to be taxable.
Right. And then you have the idea of double taxation where you, in Virginia, you... you have property tax, you have income tax, you have federal income tax, you have all of these different layers of taxes that
just are like New York
taxing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And then also here, there's a big problem with what the locality is doing, the meals tax and lodging tax, where it's essentially targeting certain industries and saying, we want this percent of your income from your business. So with a meals tax, if you go to a restaurant or a deli or a diner, you got to pay 10% or something of your bill to the local government. And that only hurts the waiters and the waitresses and the people giving you the meal or preparing the food. So it's hurting people twice, essentially. So there's so many taxes, and it's just incredible. And it's really unfortunate, because we are essentially slaves to the government in that respect, because we work in order to pay them.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. We're all essentially slaves to the government. We don't have habeas corpus anymore. We do not have a right of say over our own bodies. Fortunately, Dr. Benjamin Rush was not heeded when he tried to give his warning to our country. And that's why people are always falling back on their religious freedom provision when it comes to their medical concerns. Like, to refuse a mandated vaccine, you have to fall back on religious freedom.
Right. And even that's being questioned in Washington State and other places. They're now considered, and I heard recently in New York City, you're now being fined or something for not taking a vaccine, and it's only a $10,000 fine or something like that.
Only.
It's a lot, but it's still, like, if it was such an emergency and such a critical thing, why not $10,000? Why not $20,000? Like, they don't take themselves as serious as they're proposing their arguments to be. And so they're targeting now in Washington State. We were looking at this recently, where they're now targeting the religious exemption, and the parental rights now are in question, because now a parent can't say, well, I have a moral conflict in my conscience and I want to do what's best for my child, but the government says I can't. And so that's back to bodily autonomy as well, because it's the child who might not be knowledgeable enough, maybe he's not 18 or something yet. Now the parent is the steward of the child, and is the government now the nanny of the child? Like, we have so many layers of tyranny here, and it's really, really unfortunate. So this is one passion with the religious.
Good way to describe it. Many layers of tyranny, like an onion of tyranny.
So yeah, the as far as in Virginia, there hasn't been too much discussion about mandatory vaccinations or anything like that, because there thankfully hasn't been any real medical crisis yet. But that's one thing that we're concerned about, and one thing that Ron is kind of campaigning on is let parents have the say in these matters more so than the nanny state.
Right.
And yes, parents, if you go to public school, they should be there should be informed consent. If there needs to be something, in certain situations, it needs to be, all information needs to be on the table before a decision is made. Otherwise, it's just backroom politics and backroom medical practice. So it's not healthy for not only, obviously, the individual receiving this treatment or whatever, but it's not healthy as a society, because you then have that special class mentality where the government now says, the government becomes the medical industry, essentially.
Right.
Instead of the parents saying...
The medical industrial complex.
Yeah, essentially. That's a really good way to put it. So that's just in a nutshell, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak, but that's essentially what the philosophy is here, where as much deregulation as possible, so the medical industry, decentralize itself. Mm-hmm. And naturally, you have these free market ideas coming into the medical field where you can have natural health practitioners.
One of my guests was organizing like collectives for insurance, like a group buy-in kind of plan. So here's people coming up with these sort of outside of the box ideas, and some of them are really valuable. And one of the things that's really encouraging in this work is just seeing more and more articles coming out supporting the idea of medical freedom, of separating the government from healthcare. There's more politicians who are running on platforms to change the system that it is. So it's good to see these kinds of things developing. We still have so much further to go. I've actually been thinking lately about just how we act as a culture, as people. You know, we don't really act like the people of a free country. You know, people of a free country would be so vigilant that the store would think twice about moving the paper towel aisle because of the community backlash that could come. You know, we should be like ready to raise our voices to complain about even the little things, because it always starts with the little things.
Right.
And the little things become the big things.
Right. And I like to say when I'm talking to people about civics and things like that, I say every bad policy that you don't like at the federal level started somewhere local first.
Yeah.
Whether it's immigration, whether it's healthcare, mm-hmm. whether it's taxes, it always starts somewhere local first. So that's why it's important to get involved locally, be informed mm-hmm. about all different kinds of topics, and start getting others involved. Like when we started this campaign with Ron, it was only a couple of months ago now, and he wasn't planning to run on medical freedom at all, because he was saying, well, I want to talk about tax policy, about constitutional carry, about all these different things. And then we started talking to people, and we found out there's a huge underground community of people who are terrified that Virginia might go the way of Washington State or something, where they're now dictating what you can and cannot do and removing your religious conviction. Because in Virginia, it's a huge homeschool state. We have some of the most lenient homeschool laws in the country. That's one of the reasons my parents originally are from New York, and we moved down here because of the homeschool laws here. And there's so many private schools, not many charter schools, but there's so many different ways to be educated in Virginia. And a lot of these are, a lot of the homeschool community is very religious community, whether they're Christian or Jewish mm-hmm. or even Muslim. And it's unfortunate when they want that island of freedom to homeschool and have choice in education. And now that's being taken away on the medical front. They don't have choice in medical fields anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's, when we started talking to people about education, they were the ones to bring up, I'm concerned about the medical industry telling me what to do, or I'm concerned about the government mandating Obamacare or mandating this insurance or that insurance. Yeah. And it's scary. Like, fear is it's a very big motivator. And that's why a lot of politicians use fear tactics, because it drives people to do something.
Yeah. Christian, we have 2 minutes left. Just want to give you the heads up.
Well, I will wrap up. And again, I really appreciate
Are there any, do you want to share any websites or anything with our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. Ron Berman for Delegate. He's on Facebook, Twitter, and the website is www.voteforron.com. It's all spelled out, voteforron.com. Okay. And you can look at the issue statement about medical freedom and some other issues, and hear some of his interviews from past radio shows, we'll probably be putting out something about the foster system as well soon, because that's been a big talking point recently. There in the General Assembly, there's only recently been a foster care reform caucus or something, both Democrat and Republican, just recently started this past year, I think, and that would be something that Ron would definitely be supportive of being in, because that's a major issue as well.
Well, thank you very much, Christian. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and definitely a pleasure knowing that this has become an issue that politicians are taking notice of. And hopefully we're going to see more and more candidates who are willing to work for a change.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You're listening to Medical Freedom with Heather Martin. We will be back next month. Thank you. Bye-bye.